People are often curious about the faking normal part. And the faking normal, it started about 2 years ago when I wrote an essay. And it was an essay about myself, a composite piece, an essay about myself and several friends of mine. And we all had had decent incomes and career choice. And then in 2008, 2009, hit a wall and just had not fully recovered. But we were all still trying to keep up appearances. And that could look like agreeing to go to lunch with a group of friends and only ordering a bowl of soup. Or it could be not making the decision to move out of a house or an apartment we couldn't afford, or any number of things like that. So the pressure to pretend you're okay when you're not okay is the faking normal part. What I realized, so I wrote the essay, it was published on a PBS Facebook page, and within 3 days, it had 11,000 likes and over 1,000 comments. And I have the kind of background I can look at the data. And when I looked at the data, I was astonished. So almost a third of Americans, 55 to 64, have saved nothing, you know, not a dime, zero. Half of Americans have saved nothing. Of the people 55 to 64 who have saved, the median retirement account has $104,000. Sounds better than zero, but how long is $104,000 going to last you? And even if you were to think of it as an annuity, it's still just a little over $300 a month. So all of that made me realize the numbers of people who have landed here are significant. Often in aging, there's sort of two extremes. There are the very cool seniors, the what I call lawyers turned pastry chef, the 50 is the new 30, all of that. And then at the other end is frail, decrepit, living under a bridge, eating cat food. And there's this vast middle of people who maybe have not hit rock bottom, but for the first time in their lives can see a sequence of events where rock bottom is possible. The water pump goes out, the heat pump goes out, major car repair, and they're like standing at the abyss. So this book is giving permission to people to start now having these conversations. It's a book that deals with the emotional aspect of landing here, of mourning the loss, that the plan A that you had hoped for, you're now looking out at all that rubble, that plan A is not going to happen, and you're trying to figure out, what can I do now? Because the issue is, if many of us have not saved enough, we're also looking at this longevity bonus, which means that if you're 55 in really good health, you're going to live another 25 or 30 years. So that's a long time to be already struggling. And I think this issue is America's issue, being the retirement income crisis, is America's big denial issue. And my hope with the book is to help spark a different kind of conversation about what's happening to millions of Americans across the country.
For individuals, as you put it, who are looking at the rubble, who are living this lifestyle and perhaps are in denial, or who are recognizing it and maybe they feel helpless, what advice do you give in the book to those who are in this situation?
So there are several different things that the book talks about. So one thing is for people to recognize that they're not by themselves. People thinking that they're by themselves, there's a lot of shame and embarrassment, and that contributes to the faking normal and not really talking about what's happening to us. And the fact that millions of us are not talking about it, I also think means that we're not putting the pressure on our policymakers and legislators to, you know, start to deal with this in a more comprehensive way. So one, you're not by yourself. The other has to do with the fundamental question I ask is, how do you live a richly textured and connected life on a modest income? So it means one thing is what I call getting rid of magical thinking. And magical thinking is one, thinking that we're going back to another time where if we just do serious belt tightening, we can weather this storm and it will all be okay. And the truth is, for millions of us, this is the new normal. So, for example, I talked to many plus 50 long-term unemployed, and many of us are used to working in a 9-to-5 W-2 good benefit job. There's a lot of research now that shows that if you've been out of work over 9 months, that there's a precipitous drop in the chance of you finding a job like you did before. So what that means is if you've been out of work for a long time and you're used to making $82,000 a year in your old job, and now you get an offer for 50. I have people telling me that they are declining those offers because it's going to mess up their salary history. And the truth is, the getting rid of magical thinking is you need to take that job. Not that you can't work with a coach or an organization to try to find the W-2 good paying job you used to have, but we need to be realistic about the environment we're in. So one is this thing around the magical thinking. The other is looking at multiple income streams. Most of us are going to have to cobble together income to make ends meet. You know, so for example, I do some consulting, I teach as an adjunct professor, I do some speaking, I sell some books. Other people, it might be Uber, they rent out a spare bedroom. You know, they're an empty nester. They rent out a spare bedroom on Airbnb and they get some social security and they cobble that together and are able to make a go of it with that. But you can't just look at the income side without looking at the cost side. So what my book is doing is helping to look at the emotional aspects of landing here. So I had to get a roommate last year. You think I want a roommate? I don't want a roommate. But that's what I needed to do for some period of time to make ends meet. So it may mean that you have to move out of the house that you've lived in for 30 years because it's no longer affordable. You may have to downsize the SUV that you have. You may have to get food stamps or some other sort of support. I want us to look at this as strategy, not failure, because that failure piece, the shame piece, keeps people from taking the actions that they need to take to secure themselves. So the book deals with a number of probably sort of 10 different things that I recommend. I had a dear friend when I was writing the book who said, Elizabeth, this book better not be a talkathon. You better have some resources in there. And I took that to heart. There are over 100 online resources in this book for people to begin to make sense out of this new normal so that they can then take the next step. When I looked out at the market of what kinds of books were available for people in this situation, there was nothing that dealt with the loss and the mourning of the life I thought I was going to have, I'm now not going to have. And how do I figure out how to navigate the next steps? Lots of books on the 10 best cities to live in, how to network, how to upgrade your LinkedIn profile, how to, you know, improve your CV. But many people, before they can get to sort of all of that, need a period of contemplation. So one of the things I recommend in the book that really helped me is what I call resilience circles. And resilience circles, it's pulling together a group of people that you can tell the truth to. So my resilience circle, when I would get wobbly, when I would forget who I am or be feeling some sort of despair, there were people who could look at me and remind me who I was, remind me what I've done, what I've accomplished. And that scaffolding helped me to be sturdier. So I wrote this book. At the end of each chapter are a series of reflection questions to help people navigate this new territory. Many have read the book, formed resilience circles, gone through the question and are telling me, I mean, in a way that is so deeply gratifying, what the book has meant for them. I think back to me writing this book. My keyboard on my laptop was broken, and I couldn't afford to buy a computer. So I bought an old school plug-in keyboard, and I wrote this book sitting on my bed cross-legged, and the whole book was written in that way. So when someone tells me, a woman told me yesterday that she lost her job 2 weeks ago, she's worked continuously for the last 30 years, she has a little bit saved, and she could kind of ride it out going through her savings, or she could make the decision to move in with her mother because the future is uncertain. And she was telling me before the book, she would have tried to ride it out. And after the book, she decided that the right decision was to move in with her mother. There were a group of women, a book club, and they were telling me that they read the book together. And some of the women confided, because they used to meet in sort of coffee shops and places where everybody would have to order something. And some of the women admitted that they didn't go. They declined going because they actually couldn't afford the cup of coffee. And the other women in the group did not know that there were women among them who were in that situation where a cup of coffee would have been more than they could afford to buy. So they changed where the book club meets, and they now meet in each other's homes. And that has allowed them to have more candid situations, more honest situations about where people have actually landed. I can't tell you what it means to me to hear stories like this. You know, you sort of don't start out wanting to be, one of the poster children for this topic. You write it, and as I wrote this, I had my own embarrassment, my own, you know, not sure that I wanted to be so public. Was this a good idea? Because, I'm still in the job market. I still have to find contracts to support me. So with some trepidation, and initially I was hiding. I was, sort of pushed out. My website did not have any pictures of me. It had only cartoons because I was afraid of being recognized. I had to come through a lot of steps myself to feel comfortable in this space. But I knew that if I'm not comfortable, if I'm in the shadows, then I can't help anybody else come out of the shadows and speak honestly about what's happening to them. So the book just came out in December. It's available on Amazon. And the journey from the book coming out in December until now has been an amazing one. I have, been all over San Francisco, Boston, Memphis, Chicago, talking to groups, often people who are long-term unemployed, people who have hit an icy patch for some reason or another, are in their 50s or older. And I pause there because I'm getting more and more younger people in their 40s and sometimes even in their 30s reading this book and feeling like the principles and points of the book help them as well.
Author Elizabeth White, the book is 55 Unemployed and Faking Normal. Thank you so much.
Thank you.